This is fun! The FU Network!
Welcome to the No Bullpen on FU Politics here on Fun the FU Network. I'm Stephen Kersner. Joining me today will be Hafiz Noorani, Lauren Griffith, and Mo Amir. We're going to be talking today about racism. That's right. It's the kind of thing that's been on everybody's mind lately, ever since those practically ancient pictures of Justin Trudeau surfaced. Not to minimize the insensitivity, the racial insensitivity of the blackface pictures and the Aladdin pictures, but it has brought to mind, or has brought to the fore, a lot of, I wouldn't say discussion about racism. What I would say is it's brought to the fore a lot of outrage about racism. And first, let me say hello to everybody, and then we will get into it. Hello, Hafiz.
Hello, hello.
Hello, you got a new microphone, and I hope we'll try that out this time and see if you make more sense with this microphone.
It will filter my bullshit just that much more.
That's right. Okay, very good. Lauren Griffith is with us. Hello, Lauren.
Hello, how are you?
Good. And how are things in Barrie, Ontario?
Oh, not too bad. We just had Trudeau, so that was fun.
Oh, he was in Barrie, which is near me, and he didn't come over to visit my house.
No, he didn't. I think he just might have stopped in for a brew and a snack on his way from Sudbury. So
I'll forgive him this time. And Mo Amir, out in you're Vancouver, right? Yes, of course.
That's right. Pleasure to be here. I feel like I've been called up to the big leagues today.
That's right. Mo is regularly on Mensplaining, and now here you are on the No Bullpen. We'll see if you feel like it's the big leagues after the show's over. but I appreciate hope springs eternal. All right. So what I want to talk about today is a slightly different angle than most people have been talking about with this Justin Trudeau photograph thing, which by and large, people have made their minds up on at this point in time, and it is not really an ongoing debate. People have seen the pictures. They've had a few days to make up their mind. They know if it's changed the vote, not changed their vote, and how they feel about it. They don't feel the same as they did about Justin Trudeau as before, but you know, I personally prefer to know that the guy made mistakes in the past and he hasn't always had a halo, because I can't relate to people with halos who haven't made mistakes in the past. But this is what brings me to something that has made me very angry this past week, which is that I have watched on Twitter, on social media, and in the news how people of color, brown people, black people, have been exceptionally reasonable and understanding about the fact that these are photographs of Justin Trudeau from years ago, and that since that time he has done quite a bit to walk his talk as far as being a supporter of multiculturalism. He's been good for immigrants. He's been good for bringing in new Canadians. He's been good to new Canadians. He increased the amount of Syrian refugees we had originally planned to take. These are serious concrete steps that he planned that he did take, that they say, look, this matters more, what's happened in the past 4 years, than what happened 19 years ago. And this is from the group of people that were most affected, because certainly blackface has an exceptional history of offensive racism. Brownface is something that is a brand new term to me, but people of color have reacted with reason, with calm, with perspective and maturity, which I think the rest of Canada could learn from, because what I'm seeing is a lot of white people more angry than people of color. The outrage that I see from these very white people, mm-hmm. and by very white people, I mean not a drop of ethnicity in them, unless you consider England an ethnicity. English, Scottish background, these people who've been here, their families have been here for a long time, and they're very, very outraged. They're angry and unforgiving to Justin Trudeau because he had this lapse in judgment a couple of times, once when he was 29, another time when he was a teenager in high school. And quite frankly, high school exists for people to have bad, you know, make errors in judgment. That's where we're supposed to learn. And it, the thing that's pissed me off the most about it is I find most of it insincere. Some of it is coming from, some of that white outrage is coming from supporters of the Conservative Party, who are not all white people. They always manage to find some people of color who share those conservative views. And quite frankly, there's a lot of cultures from different parts of the world that are socially conservative that come here and have a natural fit with the social conservative part of the Conservative Party. Fine. I understand why those people are on the right are using it as a platform to pillory Trudeau from. But it's the people on the left who are just so outraged and so angry. And the thing is that I just can't get past the idea that they are using their outrage, their public outrage, that they're demonstrating to everybody on social media, they're using that to try to cleanse their own souls from the fact that they were alive during the time that these photographs were taken. They were possibly teenagers, possibly young adults. They know that back then, they might not have thought anything of these pictures either. They may have made the same stupid mistakes, the same racial insensitivities that we now, looking backwards, we can say, you know, as our society has progressed, we look back and say, we were not particularly mature or sensitive or caring to people of color back then. But I think a lot of the white outrage is coming from people who think that they can cleanse their past and cleanse their conscience by screaming loud and clear now how outraged they are at the racism, when I know damn well that most of them back then would have either participated in the same damn thing, not thought anything of it, or laughed and thought it was funny. Very few of them would have been had 2019 eyes looking back 20 years ago and said, I find this offensive. And that bothers me, because what we're seeing is racism being turned into a prop for people. It's being turned into a prop for propaganda purposes on the right, and on the left, it's being used to for people to try to do the tarantella, to try to claim that they, you know, somehow polish their own halos, that they're above what Trudeau did back then, when they know damn well they weren't. And it is treating racism as a toy, as a political prop, as something that isn't serious and doesn't need to be talked about and looked at. And that pisses me off, because I am technically white. It depends. If you ask somebody who's a white supremacist if a Jew is white, they will tell you no. When I worked on a show on CBC, and we had to book a panel, and every night of the three people on the panel, one person had to be a person of color or a minority, and one person had to be a woman. When I suggested that the minority position one night be filled by a Jewish person, I was informed that no, Jews are not a minority, and they're white. So it depends where you sit. But I find that there's a lot of this outrage is bullshit, and it's covering up a national discussion we should be having, which is that there's a lot of casual racism that goes on every day here in Canada that this outrage is covering up. And that's why the panelists we have today are the panelists we have today, because Hafiz, Mo, Lauren, you all have, you're all people of color in one way or another. And I want to talk about the casual racism that you guys experience that someone like me may not recognize, may not experience. First, I'll start with Hafiz. Hafiz, you're a brown person.
No way. Really?
Yeah, I know. You have a mirror. Now
I haven't ever looked at it.
Do you feel day to day, and maybe not every day, but have you felt on a regular basis just a sense of some casual racism directed your way?
Look, I would say that, since the era of modern sort of terrorism and whatnot, people do give me a different look. Like, if I don't shave, definitely a different look.
And you're South Asian, right?
I am South Asian. I also noticed that on Twitter, no matter what I comment on, my name, either Hafiz Nurani, instantly means I'm Muslim. even though I'm not very religious. I'm like the worst religious person out there. And also, everything comes back to my skin tone or my name and where it comes from. And
I've seen that.
And it's kind of funny because if anyone else says that, that's not a person of color, it would just be a discussion. But everything now must be filtered through my colorful lens and my Muslim heritage. And it's really weird because, I'll be honest, I've experienced racism not just in Canada. I've experienced it everywhere else in the world. Being of two different communities, you get that. And it's kind of different over here. It's not like a direct racism. It's like an undertone. It's like it's kind of in their face and in the back of their mind, but they want to present it through a filter.
Okay, so you think that they're thinking it, but they know better than to act on it or say it, other than those people we see captured on cell phone cameras that wind up all over the internet.
Or, if you're Ezra Levant and you want to call people of color porch slaves, then that type of person is ready to act on it right away.
Well,
right?
I will say, as a Jewish person, as is Ezra Levant, for all Jewish people, I apologize for Ezra Levant. He's a disgrace. Any Jew who knows about the history of racism and anti-Semitism against Jews that is not limited to the Holocaust but goes back centuries, any Jew who would perpetuate any kind of racism against anyone else, there is a Yiddish term for it, shunda, which means they're a shame, they're a humiliation, an embarrassment, because nobody knows, I can't say nobody, but certainly Jews know what racism is and how it can affect people. And every time I see some racist comment or some comment, anti-gay comment or whatever, every time I see some bigoted comment, I take the group that's being targeted out and I immediately put the word Jew in there. And I see these are the same things people were saying about my people not that long ago. Some are still saying it. Go ahead.
I think, you know what, I really appreciate that. And I think, you know, people like from the Jewish community and others that have experienced it but are somewhat more accepted in this culture in Canada have really come to our support. And they've stood up for things like that. It's really sad, though, that we're in a state now where Justin Trudeau's blackface or brownface or whatever you want to call it has now reinstated this mindset where now you can just bring up someone's ethnicity and bug them about their opinion on this solely on the color of their skin and then judge them for not following through with what they think is a reasonable response to that. My background and my experience is completely negated because, you know what, this is how you're supposed to react to this racism. And if you don't, you're a bootlicker and you're making excuses for Justin Trudeau. But guess what? No one from the Liberal Party has ever come up with a concept where immigrants and whatnot are not welcome or could have their passports taken away or should be used on a tip line system. You know what? That's not coming from this side of the political spectrum. It's coming from one particular side, and that's on the right.
Okay. I mean, I've noticed, Hafiz, that you talk about your social media. I've noticed on Twitter that you will comment on a political issue, and somebody will respond treating you as an ethnicity, not an individual.
Exactly. I'm all brown people all the time.
And as if there is nothing, as if your opinion can be written off because it's clearly affected by you having a particular ethnic origin, that you're not a Canadian like everybody else, and your opinion comes from you as a Canadian. There's this, as you mentioned, filter that's put in place where your opinions are looked at and judged differently because your name is Hafiz Noorani instead of, you know, Howard Newman.
When they see Hafiz Noorani and they see a brown dude, that's all they see. They don't look at the name or concept or think of it as a person. They just think, what does this brown dude think? Why does he not think that this is racist? Or how dare he not think that this is racist? It doesn't matter what my name is. And it doesn't matter what my life experience has been. Look, I've seen the world, thankfully, because of the life my parents have given me. And unfortunately, there's a lot of racism out there. Not everything is horrible as I've seen elsewhere over here, but everything over here that you experience is the stuff that affects you, is the ones that stick with you throughout your life, where someone directly says something to you or offends you. And I've had that on Twitter as well. I've got very thick skin. I will retweet their comment with a little bit of snark and let everyone else see them for who they are, because that's the way you fight racism.
Yeah, you're right. You expose ignorance by exposing ignorance. Lauren.
Yes.
Thank you for waiting. Now, Lauren, your background is what?
I am basically an Oreo cookie. I am both white and black. So for me, it's such an interesting mix to be, because in some instances, depending on the type of racism or depending on how deep you're talking about the racism, like how deep it gets in society, I'm not black enough to talk about those issues. Black people will just be like, no, there's too much white in you, don't talk. Like, I'm just automatically disqualified from the conversation. And then on the other side, you know, if I'm kind of giving, you know, a white person's perspective, you know, every white person that is, you know, bigoted or, you know, subconsciously so, they say, well, you know, you're only half right on this. Ha ha. Like,
so you can't win.
I can't, right? Like, both sides will exclude me based on the other side of me. So I'm kind of stuck in this racial limbo where, you know, I get it from both sides, and also I can't say anything on either behalf. But whenever someone, usually what happens is, you know, white people will just make those stupid cracks more than anybody else. You know, that's the sort of casual racism that I'll face, where, you know, people will just be like, oh, you know, you're only half right on this issue, or you're only like half good at basketball, or like just things like that.
Now, how much do you think, Lauren, those comments are being made by people who are trying to make the situation much more comfortable by bringing it right out into the open? They're awkward jokes, they're ignorant jokes, but it's a way of trying to show acceptance that doesn't show acceptance.
I think I get what you're saying. So it's like kind of like, you know, the father-in-law making those, or like the uncle jokes at Thanksgiving, where they make those terrible jokes, but you're like, yeah, they mean well.
It's sort of like that. I guess what I mean is, sometimes to break the ice, sometimes to let to let you know that, yeah, we know that you're a mix of white and black, and we're going to make jokes to let you know that we don't have a problem with this at all. And they didn't ask whether you had a problem with those jokes or not, but the attempt might be there to try to take some possible tension out of the situation, or it's just complete absolute ignorance. I guess it's hard to know. You would know your friends or these people better than I do.
On the internet, I would say it's more option B, right? Because they'll just, that's the internet. But when it comes to like friends and just, you know, real life, I don't know. It's hard to say because I feel that it's, they don't mean it in that kind of malicious way because they're my friend, right? Like they're
right
to hang out with someone that they viscerally dislike. But I think it's rooted in a place that never means well, so they can't really mean well. Like, do you see where I'm going?
I see where you're coming. Let me ask you this. I am one of the, I'm a person who's fortunate enough that I never have problems with legroom on airplanes. In other words, I am not a tall person.
Yeah.
People will make jokes, friends and stuff will make jokes about my height or about the fact that I don't have the hair I used to have on my head.
Yeah.
Sometimes people make jokes about otherness, about difference. Do you see the jokes that you're talking about that are made in your direction as different than the jokes that would be made to somebody who is tall, who is short, who is bald, who has long hair, who is too thin, who is overweight? Do you see them as different in character and coming from a different place?
I do, again, just based off of the fact that like it's rooted in a place that just isn't, it's never made in good intentions, whether the person means to or not, right? It's the same thing with the whole blackface idea. Oh, I was just paying homage. Okay, but you know, it's still not something you should do. Here's the history as to why.
Oh boy.
You can have that good intent, whatever, but when it comes to that kind of break the ice, you know, jokey thing, I don't know. I think, you know, because it's always coming from like white friends, so I kind of sometimes feel that it's just like they're just saying it on the slide because they know that they can get away with it, because it's not just me. Like, they will just make like outright just racist jabs, and I'm like, okay, that's not okay, bro. You can't do that. They're like, well, whatever. You're, you know,
what, you're oversensitive? Is that what they're trying to say?
they'll pull the, you know, you're only half right on this issue, or like, you know, you're only half heartedly mad, or whatever.
Interesting, you say that you get this from the white side, but you don't get this from your black friends, who you said earlier will say that your opinion on black issues doesn't really count, but they won't make jokes the same way about your mixed heritage.
It's actually kind of funny. I don't really have black friends in real life.
Is that because you live in Barrie?
Barrie, possibly. You know, I had my parents down, my dad and my aunt, my uncle, we went out to a diner to eat, and these two old ladies, they were white, and they're like, oh, is Caravana this weekend? Because they've never
wait a minute. Where were you? Was this Toronto?
No,
or Barrie?
It was in Barrie.
When has there been a Caravana in Barrie?
Yeah, I don't know why they thought that, but they had never seen three adult black people together. I guess that was enough for them to assume that Caravana.
Were you wearing feathers?
No.
And the costumes like they wear at Caravana?
No, nope, just normal human beings walking into a diner to eat.
And okay, well, I got to tell you that sitting on this side of the microphone, that's racist as shit.
Right?
That kind of comment is, I didn't know if there, you know, is there Caravana this weekend? Because three black people come into a restaurant.
And it wasn't like they were like appalled that we were there. Like, it was just like a genuine, like, oh my goodness, there's like three black people in here. This doesn't happen. What's going on? I don't like.
Well, if you had been a space alien, it might have been the same response, right? Like, oh, look, some people with massive heads and silver suits.
Exactly.
Like that kind of thing. It was just a, this doesn't happen here. These kinds of people don't get seen here.
Yeah.
So it was, that's what's known as in some corners as benign racism.
Yes.
Meaning they don't hate you.
Yep.
They don't say you shouldn't be there, but it's odd for them that you are.
Yes. And that's kind of what I feel that like those, those friend jokes are, right? Like, because it's been so deeply rooted in like our pop culture and stuff like that, and just like stereotypes, tropes, etc., all that kind of stuff. It's always been acceptable to make those kinds of passing, casual, like not outwardly hateful racist things. Like, if you can get it on the sly, it's okay.
Well, I think that there may not be any hate in their heart whatsoever, but what they are still doing is pointing out othering.
Yeah.
They're still pointing out where you're different. And before we move on to Mo, I want to point out that you said at the top, Lauren, that you're an Oreo.
Yes.
And you know what the world's most favorite cookie is?
I know.
It's the Oreo. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mo Amir.
Yes, sir.
Mo, short for Muhammad.
That's correct.
So you may have experienced some of the casual racism that's been discussed so far. Have you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've, like everyone else on this panel, have experienced racism across the spectrum. And, you know, I'll be the first one to say that for sure there are gradations of racism, but they are a little more multidimensional than just a spectrum. And even that distinction, you know, casual racism versus real racism, almost brings it down to an anecdotal level when it's much more serious than that, I would say. And it's one of those things, you know, what would upset you more? You know, the very small minority of people that might harass you about your race or your religion to the point where, you know, you fear for your safety, or the larger institutional biases that discriminate against you for employment opportunities or allow less political acceptance of you and people that look like you. And I would say that on a day-to-day basis, the latter actually is a lot more insidious and affects you more, because we do live in a society that is relatively safe. You know, most people in Vancouver, I can speak for Vancouver, don't go outside fearing violence for any reason.
Unless you're on East Hastings, I understand, right?
Even, lately there's been some issues, but generally speaking, even the downtown east side is not terrible. I mean, it's not a nice place necessarily to walk down or to spend an afternoon, but it is relatively safe.
Okay.
Up until recently, there have been some shootings, but the point is, I mean, I just don't want to brush away this idea of like casual racism is no big deal. I mean, even the story we just told about the couple at the restaurant with that comment, like,
yeah,
that's not, you know, there was nothing particularly harmful. And even Lauren said that, you know, they didn't mean it in a mean way, but nevertheless, it's still not a great thing. And you had a pretty visceral reaction to that as well.
Oh, I was appalled by the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
Because listen, I just, as a personal anecdote to stick in here, my background is that I grew up in a largely WASPy community, middle class community. Mm-hmm. There was a sizable Jewish community, but in the elementary school I was in, I got lots of anti-Semitism from kids who I don't think even knew what they were saying, because they were mirroring things they heard at home. But my grade 6 teacher in our, I don't know if everybody had the same experience, but when I was in school, there would be a spelling test every week, and you'd have a list of words, and the teacher would read the word, and then put the word in a sentence, and then you had to spell it on a piece of paper. And one week, the word came up was tolerant. And she said, we Canadians are tolerant because we allow Jewish people to practice their faith.
Wow.
And that was very clear to me that we Canadians meant I'm not a Canadian. You know, I'm born here. My parents are born here, but I was a guest. And you know what? I don't think the woman felt any hate. I think she was ignorant and she was old. I have some forgiveness for people who grew up in different eras, who are trying. But you know, that's sort of the experience I come from. So when I hear the story that Lauren told about, is it Carabana? Because three black people walk into a restaurant in Barrie. I have that same visceral reaction when I hear that as when I recount the story I just told you from being in sixth grade of there's Canadians and then there's Canadians who are kind of on a guest level. You know, sorry to interrupt you, but, and you're talking about when we talk about casual racism, Mo, I'm not talking about racism that's not significant. I'm talking about stuff that people might not, certainly if you're in the majority culture, if you're in the white majority culture, you may not recognize that people of color go through every day. That's what I'm talking about. The things that someone with my skin tone may not have to deal with, may never hear, may never get the hairy eyeball for, that people of color deal with every single day. And that's what I'm talking about. And I'm wondering if you have any examples of that, of just day-to-day stuff happening that probably a white person wouldn't have to deal with that you do.
Oh, I mean, me personally, I'm, even though I have nexus to cross the border into the U.S., I'm always pulled into the special room for a nice little interview, which is...
Really?
Yeah, that always happens. I mean, my name is Mohammed, I understand. But even with nexus, even going through that extra step of having a background check, it still happens.
Yeah, so, for those who don't know what that is, nexus is a as Mo said, it's a background check. It's for people who frequently cross the border to the United States. It's sort of an express lane where they do a check on you and so on, so you don't have to stand in the line that everyone else stands in when you come back into Canada going through customs. You can go through a faster lane, and the point of Nexus is so that you can go through faster and not get pulled into secondary.
Exactly.
And you're saying that even with that background check, you're pulled into secondary.
Yeah, I mean, they have your retina scan, they have your fingerprints, but nevertheless, I get pulled in. And to be completely honest, I have a completely clean record. I don't have anything against me, but I'm brought in every time. So just, you know, crossing the border creates a certain anxiety where friends don't get it. They're like, oh, don't, like, be cool. And I'm like, I just know it's going to happen. Like, it doesn't matter how cool I am. It's going to happen anyways.
And you're a pretty cool guy, I have to say.
Thank you. I try.
Yeah. What's funny when you mention secondary is that there was, if you recall a few years back, there was an Irish woman who was the girlfriend or wife of I think it was a Muslim man. Anyway, she had terrorist sympathies. And after that, my wife, who is a pale redhead and appears Irish, of Irish extraction.
Sure.
She got the hairy eyeball that people of color were getting. She was, she was joking that she's a person of no color, being as pale as she is. But she was getting the same looks and the same scrutiny suddenly at the border because now she was associated with somebody who was associated with a terrorist. So now it's like, oh, you Irish, you're sympathetic to the Islamic terrorists. Like, just odd, odd extensions that I don't even know if these people are conscious of their bigotry.
No, they're probably not. And you know, it's a very human thing to stereotype, to data chunk, to extrapolate from one case or one anecdote onto a general population. And that goes beyond race, right? That's not just limited to race. I did want to talk about what the political angle here, because you brought that up, and you brought this idea about people using race as a prop, and using even this whole blackface incident as a politicized prop. I don't think Justin Trudeau is a phony, and I don't think he's a raging racist. I do, however, think he's shallow. And I think him and his communications team are really good at wielding words like intersectionality and privilege, but I don't think he himself has demonstrated necessarily what those things mean. And this is important when we do talk about people of color, because, you know, Justin Trudeau likes to dress up. He admitted that himself, whether it's Indian garb or Indigenous garb. And he's always viewed that identity theater as a type of outreach. And I think he genuinely believes that it is. But I think people of color have a certain cynicism towards that as well. Some people like it, but I think there are others that feel that they're just being treated as a voting block as opposed to an individual Canadian. Mm-hmm. And the South Asian community is very diverse in itself, right? Just because you wear some Indian garb doesn't mean that you're going to connect with every South Asian. And well, I think, well, no, you know,
we're very diverse. Like, we're not all this, like, if you even look at India and Pakistan,
yeah,
and everyone in between, we have 12 different languages or something in one country, and each one acts like a different culture.
Well, I think it's actually in India, it's hundreds and hundreds, yeah, in terms of languages spoken by a million people or more. And so the point I wanted to get at is that the liberals have sort of rubbed people the wrong way. They seem like they like to posterize, or some cynics might say, you know, tokenize diversity. And it becomes frustrating for a lot of people of color that don't like being seen that way. I mean, there was an article last week about Omar Aziz, who is a former liberal advisor to Chrystia Freeland. And he said that he left his job because of the way liberal staffers were talking about the objectification of these groups. They were basically calling them ethnic vote banks, and he claims that they were white-splaining things to him. And we've seen this cynicism in Canada before. One thing you may not be aware of, because you're on the East Coast, we had a scandal here in our provincial politics called the Quick Win scandal. And that was, it was a memo that was released, and it showed that the BC Liberals, which has no relation to the federal Liberals, they wanted to, it says in the memo, like, they wanted to offer official apologies for the Chinese head tax and the Komagata Maru incident, not because the party felt strongly about it, because they wanted to consolidate the ethnic vote. And, you know, there actually is some crossover between the BC Liberals and the federal Liberals, most notably Ben Chen as well. But I just wanted to really emphasize that, you know, we are obviously a diverse group. Some people of color may, you know, may completely forgive Trudeau, but there is a strong segment that is also very cynical of this type of an identity politics.
And I agree with Mo on that. Like, the tokenization within left-leaning parties too, of, you know, where they pander to an entire ethnic group, and when then you meet with a candidate, they speak to you as the ethnic group, not as an individual. It's very different. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, someone like myself and Mo, we grew up here, pretty much. Like, we came here very young, and as far as we're concerned, we have, I think, very little Indianness left in me. And so to hear issues that are spoken to me as though I am off that off of background, as opposed to a Canadian, is kind of off-putting sometimes. And I would say this comes from almost every party. It's not just one party that's responsible for this. These cultural enclaves and trying to get the whole cultural enclave to vote one way is part of the issues that we're facing today.
Well, you know, I will say that what disappoints me about my ethnic group, my ethno-religious group, is that they have Jews in the neighborhood I used to live in turned conservative, because even though Jewish values are liberal values, of caring for the needy, of opening the door to the stranger, that's all through Jewish teachings. They put that aside because the conservatives were saying the right things about Israel.
Yeah.
And so they have a conservative member of parliament over there, Peter Kent, who is as Justin Trudeau described him, a piece of shit, as far as I'm concerned. But because the conservatives under Harper were very pro-Israel, which is in it, my community doesn't seem to understand that the Christians that are very strongly pro-Israel are strongly pro-Israel because they believe that Israel has to exist so that it can be destroyed so that Jesus can come back. They don't realize that this is no compliment. But there was that ethnic politics that went on there. And there was somebody running for the Liberal Party against Peter Kent. This person has a spotless history in the Jewish community as a leader of organizations that defended not just Jews, but all people against racism, but certainly very, very prominent Jewish organization. He ran, and I thought, he's a shoo-in in this community. And he didn't win because at the leader at the time made some comment that was seen as disparaging of the Israeli government. And so right away, they all ran to the conservatives. And that pissed me off because there are other issues than just that. And no liberal leader has ever been anti-Israel. Commenting about the present Israeli government does not make you anti-Israel. So there are those ethnicities. And years ago when I was in politics, a friend of mine ran in a district across from mine. His last name was Ross, and that's a white sounding name. And he's Jewish. He ran against somebody whose last name was Goodman, which was a very Jewish name. Now, my friend was very qualified for the job. He did 2 full literature drops for the neighborhood, canvassed every night with people, knocking on doors. This other guy, Goodman, was a lunatic who did no literature drops whatsoever, did not knock on any doors, and he wound up getting 3 times the vote that my friend, whose last name was Ross, got. And that was when I walked away from politics, because I know that that's not unique to Jewish people. That is not unique. That is the same no matter where you go in this country or in this world. You will have people who think that someone whose name is closest to theirs will protect them more or understand them more. You drive through certain communities in Toronto, you'll see candidates. The signs for candidates are only Chinese heritage. You'll see others where they're Persian heritage. And you know what the community is in that area. We're a tribal people, human beings. And we, I mean, you boil it down. People argue about whether DC or Marvel is their tribe. Never mind talking about ethnicity.
We're absolutely a tribal people. And then there comes this hierarchy of tribalism, because, I mean, there's been news articles about Jagmeet Singh and how some NDP faithful don't want to vote NDP because of him. They don't think that, you know, Canada's ready for a racialized prime minister.
That's the biggest shocker to me at all.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's tribalism, but they're racial tribalism or... Yeah. Ethnic tribalism, whatever they conceive in terms of how they see it, supersedes their party tribalism.
Isn't it interesting, right? Mo, that the way you phrased it is that they don't think that Canada is ready for a brown person in a turban to be prime minister. It's not that they're not ready.
Yeah.
It's that they think that others aren't ready, so they're not going to support him. Like, that is
I think that's just classic projection.
Yeah, that's such self-deception. It's like, well, I got no problem with it, but I think other people have a problem with it, so I can't support them. I mean, we're a mass of contradictions as human beings. And the fact is that, Hafiz, I have a friend who you remind me of who is himself South Asian, lives in the United States now, has for years and years. One of the first things he said to us when he met Leanne and I was, I have to tell you, my community is so racist.
Oh my God. It's fucking hilarious. The people in the North hate the people of the South. The people of the East hate the people of the West. And if you write differently, you're fucked. Like,
yeah, it's...
India is the height of tribalism. It gets to the point to where they will get to the nitty gritty of the things that you believe in. Yep. Right. And it's ridiculous because for an outsider, they'd be like, wait, you guys all look the same. But to us, we could even look at each other and say, well, no, that guy's darker and clearly South Indian and therefore less worthwhile.
Yeah, it's very odd. I mean, and Lauren, you're caught in the middle of this because you're from both worlds. And growing up as an Oreo, as you put it, did you notice different treatment than your friends who were either fully chocolate or fully vanilla were?
So I actually totally grew up in just like white suburbia. I think the first other person of color that moved in like around the school was like grade 7 or 8, and we were like beside ourselves. You know, so
wait, well, you were beside yourselves because
quite literally
you were happy that there was somebody else there, or
just like, I meant like just like the community, they were just like, whoa, there's like, and they were like just a fully black family, like black mom, black dad, black kids. So right. They like, everybody just, their minds were blown.
Did they not want them there, or they just, or this was just something completely new to them?
It was new to them, but like I could see the aversions. Like I could, and I'm not sure if it was just because of like the otherness, just like it being a new site, new person that you're not used to in your community, that tribalism. But those poor girls, like, they just, to me, like, as a kid seeing them, it just, it took adjustment for everybody. But I guess, like, I don't know, like, they figured it out, like, they thrived very quickly.
Oh, good. Well, I mean, I'm glad to hear, I didn't expect that ending. That's, glad to hear that. And, you know, there's another kind of casual racism that goes on, which is in language and how people speak to each other. Because my wife, Leanna, who's been on the show before, she grew up in the Jane and Finch area of Toronto. And if you live in Toronto, you know that area is mostly black and brown people, mostly from the Caribbean islands. Mm-hmm. They're the majority in that population. She was the minority. Yeah. So she was socialized differently.
Yes.
She was socialized at a socioeconomic level that was lower than the average. And she was socialized with more Caribbean heritage styles of speaking amongst her friends. And sometimes when she is amongst the hoity-toity white people that we have mixed with being in show business, she has no idea what they're talking about. She sees very much a code in the way language is distributed. Like you can tell where somebody comes from, even if they speak perfectly. Perfect English without, you know, they put the G's on every word that needs a G at the end. They don't sound ignorant. There's no accent. There are tells in how we interact with each other in language. Have you guys noticed that?
Of language that's been used, and it drives me nuts. Exotic. Can we please stop describing people as exotic? Please.
Yeah, we're not a fish.
Like, no? Like, please.
Well, I mean, I guess I suppose exotic, you know, now that you're saying that, it's supposed to be a compliment and alluring and mysterious, but at the same time, I guess that's just a load of bullshit. Of a nicer way of saying you're the other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, and that was something that I used to get a lot of as a kid, right? They'd be like, oh, goodness, like, you know, your kid, them speaking to my mom, they'd say, mm-hmm. you know, your kid's really pretty, blah, 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 you know, but she's like, you know, very exotic looking, very exotic. And it's just that phrase, like, was fine, I guess, as a kid for me. I was like, yeah, that's kind of cool, I guess, but
it's a casually racist compliment. Yes.
It's, you know,
it's benign racism.
Yes.
And I find sexualized too. Like, I find that anytime anyone uses the word exotic, it's like, what I'm actually describing is that I'd like to fuck your color.
Because that's usually what they do. That's how they describe it. Like, you know,
it would look good on me if I had this human being that's an exotic pet. Like, whatever. Like, I've always wanted to fuck this color with this hair and that. Can you please calibrate yourself to this exact specific thing I want? You know, and it's just, I'm like, really?
So you've clearly, Hafiz, you have been objectified.
You know what? I never turned down objectification. Like, you can objectify me all you want. But I've seen this. I've had friends of color who've experienced this. And you know what? If you look at the online dating world, you see it all the time.
It's interesting. That's interesting.
Something exotic. You're like, oh,
listen, there was a family member who, extended family, in-law family member who only dated women of Asian background. It didn't matter where in Asia, but, you know, Chinese, Japanese, so on. That was what was attractive to him. And so people said that he had yellow fever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
And then there was, of course, jungle fever. Mm. You know, like, there's all these terms which are, first of all, why is it a problem? Somebody can like blonde, someone can like redheads, someone can like brunettes, and nobody says anything about that. But if a white person happens to like somebody who's appears Chinese, Japanese, Korean, then there's a term for that?
I think it depends on the context, right? Like, a lot of what we've just discussed is about, one, objectifying someone, and then also homogenizing them based on their based on their race. And I think obviously we each have our own sexual preferences in terms of what we prefer and what we don't. But it becomes problematic when you say something. And I this is a terrible thing I would say, but I've heard it before when people say, "Oh, I like dating Asians because they're quiet or they're obedient or whatever." And now you're like, you know, that's why you date Asians as opposed to a preference.
I know a guy with zero personality who he inherited money when his parents died, and mm-hmm. he took that money and he went to Japan to try to find himself a subservient, because he thought the women there were more subservient, and he would come back with some Japanese mate, and they found him as obnoxious as we find him here. He became rather bitter. I wanted to just drop in an experience I had where I met the wife of a colleague, and I didn't know that my colleague's wife is black. It wasn't relevant, but my colleague was quite a bit younger than me and teased him a lot and thought he was a little bit of a putz. Mm-hmm. So when I met his wife, who was a very intelligent, poised, like just a very impressive person, I was extremely surprised that she had interest in him. And we talked for quite a while about issues and various things. And I said to him the next day, I said, I was very impressed with your wife. She's this. And then I said, and she was so, when we were discussing X, she was so articulate. Mm-hmm. And he paused and he said, you know, that's a racial comment, right? I said, what is?
What?
Yeah. And go ahead, Lauren. I mean, you know this, right?
Yes. when you're calling a black person, when you comment on a black person's articulation or how well spoken they are, how well read, well dressed, well kept, that's seen as uncharacteristic of how they were portrayed back in the day, right?
Yeah, you're surprised that they have those qualities. Where, you know, as someone who's not racist, I didn't have the foggiest that I was supposed to consider that black people would be less articulate. As far as I was concerned, she was more articulate than most of the people I've spoken to. So it was meant clearly as a compliment, had nothing to do with her race. And but at the same time, I had committed a faux pas, and somebody who didn't know me quite as well might have thought that came from a racist place, as opposed to I deal with people all the time who are gibbering morons. Yes. And it's nice to talk to somebody who's able to clearly address their thoughts and communicate their thoughts. And it's interesting that I don't know if it was both Hafiz and Mo. We're both surprised when I said that articulate was seen as
I wasn't. I heard this one. I understand why that is seen as that would come across as insulting to someone. And I've experienced that before as someone that speaks English. People are always shocked that I don't have an accent. And they say, well, what part of India are you from? And I'm like, you do realize this entire country that's India still operates on the English language.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it was an English colony. And yeah. You're the English schooling system, for crying out loud.
Exactly.
Oh man. Well, you know what? I think that we've had a lot to say, and I think that I appreciate this conversation. I appreciate everyone's honesty and your willingness to be candid about your experiences. Because I think this is the part of racism that we don't talk about. The things that are unconscious, the things that we all may carry around in our heads and not know, and we don't think ourselves as racist, and perhaps we aren't, in the sense that we wouldn't treat somebody differently. We don't hate somebody for that. But we might have certain different expectations of how someone will behave or what their opinion will be based on what their skin color is, or what their facial features are like. And the anger that I saw these very white people getting into over Justin Trudeau, it just seemed to me like such bullshit, because how many times a day do those people do the kinds of things we just talked about now, the kinds of casual racism, the kind of comments or thoughts that they transmit, body language and so on, that in its own way makes racialized people feel like others and uncomfortable.
Sorry, real quick, but I think the important thing here is the growth that comes with this, right? If you come from a place where, you know, with your example, saying, you know, oh, she's articulate. Now that you know, there's a mental note where you go, not going to, you know,
not going to say that
this way.
Yeah.
But when you keep going at it, even though you know, or you refuse to make efforts to understand where these people are coming from, then I think it's safe to say that you may not care as much as you'd like to think you do.
Yeah. Well, or I've heard somebody say, well, I know what I mean by it, so I'm not changing the way I speak just because they take it a different way. And it's like, what do you think communication is? It's not about what you think you mean. It's about what the other person takes from what you're saying.
Yeah.
I want to thank you all for joining me here on the No Bullpen. Mo Amir has a fantastic podcast series called This Is Van Color. I've got an episode that's going to be going up as a special on FU Politics as well. And I encourage people, where can they find that, Mo?
So you can go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, search for This Is Van Color. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Van Color. And I'm really looking forward to the special presentation we're going
to
do.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. Lauren, you are the co-host of the Zodcast with Neil Wadowich, correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and I'm looking forward to the next episode you guys drop on us, because everyone has been getting better and better. And you guys have a really good rhythm. And I think that the soft-spoken way that the Zodcast, it's funny because something called Zodcast, coming from Neil before Zod, General Zod from Krypton, would be a soft-spoken but very impactful thing, is something, a contrast that people probably don't expect. So if you see Zodcast listed in FU Politics and you think it's going to be Terrence Stamp in leather shouting, no, it's not. It's Neil and it's Lauren and guests sometimes, and talking about issues, but in a much more soft-spoken way. So thank you, Lauren, for participating and sharing. And Hafiz, jury is out on your PlayStation headset.
You know what? I don't get a chance to ever use this headset. I barely ever use my PS4. I was like, let me try this out over here. Maybe I can use this with the setup.
All right. Well, thank you for making us the guinea pigs.
Well, it was fun.
Hafiz is a digital content advisor and consultant, an expert, and of course a regular on many of our shows, as well as the producer of Mensplaining, which is not what you think it is when you first hear the term. It's men talking to men about what it's like to be men in 2019 and what their responsibilities are.
How to be better men.
Yeah, how to be better men. How to be better men in 2019.
Less making excuses, less being whiny little bastards, and actually coming together and being solid on how we can improve as guys.
That's right. In other words, we're a bunch of cucks. Okay. thank you, everybody. Thank you very much. I want to remind everyone who's listening, if you've enjoyed this, the right-wing media has a lot of money, very, very, very deep pockets. Post Media made it very clear a little while ago that they're going to slant things conservative. If you look at the coverage of the election, you'll find most companies with deep pockets are lean towards right. Media that tries to stay moderate in the center, like we're doing, they don't really exist. And we certainly don't have corporate backing. So our backing is you who's listening. So if you'd like to help us out, you can give us a one-time support at PayPal by going to funetworktv at gmail.com. Or you can become a subscriber and a patron at patreon.com/funetworktv. Every dollar, every $5, whatever you can contribute per month, it helps. Because now we're going to buy Hafiz a better microphone. I want to thank everybody for listening. I'm Stephen Kersner. This has been the No Bullpen here on FU Politics on Fund the FU Network.
This is Fun, the FU Network.